Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
The topic of economics is very important, and I've touched on it in many different ways in the past, but it needs revisiting and it needs some fleshing out with various information that I think most whites don't really appreciate. What I'm about to tell you has many uses. The first use is for whites in the alt-right, in the white right, where we've got Jews and liberals constantly trying to smash whites down. And they are relying on the fact that if they basically ban us, then they are in effect putting sanctions on us. They are using big corporations and their leverage to try to prevent us from having access to various things. But what I'm about to say here applies even more importantly to the future, and especially to us in Southern Africa. But there are important lessons here that apply to our whole race. There are a great many things that I've been thinking about regarding capitalism and regarding our own situation and regarding the future. And there are many aspects of it that I want to deal with. I have mentioned things like junk capitalism, which I think I'll touch on a bit here today. And another topic that I don't think I've ever mentioned, but it's something that I've given a lot of thought to, and it's got to do with the misdirection of human resources, the misdirection of skills in our race. At the end of the day, what this basically boils down to is that if you are facing an enemy, a malicious enemy that is trying to control you, trying to weaken you, etc., basically trying to control you the way the Jews are, then you will find that if you don't have control over various aspects of your life and of the things that are important to us, that ultimately the enemy beats us because we don't control critical things. And the more I look at it, and the more I look at all whites, the more I am saying to myself that we need to take control of everything in our lives. If we don't take control of everything in our lives, and we start leaving it to Jews and to non-whites, etc., I'm telling you, that is the path to destruction. Then you are going down a path that is a nightmare. I have in the past read communist literature. I read communist literature not because I wanted to be a communist, but because I was trying to understand the communists. And in the process of reading their voluminous garbage, and boy, is communist literature absolutely voluminous, and boy, can they carry on and on and on endlessly with all kinds of theory, etc. And I personally found it extremely irritating to read. But now that I understand that it originates from Jews, now it makes sense completely why it's such a tedious, winding, crazy road of all kinds of junk theory. Whereas if you go and you look at like the Germans and the Italians, they just solved their problems and moved on. But communism is a very tedious thing. And these blacks and everybody who have learned communism from the Jews, oh boy, are they full of theory. But their theory never works out in reality. So when you hear about communism, I originally heard that communism was socialism. And much, much, much later, I learned that you get national socialism, which is what the Germans did. And let me tell you, they may both talk about socialism, but you cannot compare Jewish Bolshevik socialism with national socialism. Those things are as different as chalk and cheese. They may have socialism in the name, but that's as far as it goes. You cannot compare these things at all. Communism, Jewish Bolshevism, which is its real name, that thing is a huge flop. But let me just touch on various things that whites need to know. A term that you might not have heard of is human capital. It's something I came across in a strategic analysis newsletter that I was looking at a few years ago. Human capital. Human capital is the skills of the people. And human capital is very important. The more I look at economics and junk capitalism and all the weirdness in capitalism, the more convinced I am that we need to move towards a system of skills. I have mentioned this a long time ago. A long, long time ago, I did a video about, I spoke about our skills versus Jewish capital, something like that. It had to do with using our skills versus Jewish capital. The Jews are relying on lots of money, but in our case, it's a case of using our technical and other skills to make up for the lack of money. Now, in the case of these Jews, when they are coming after us, they are effectively trying to put sanctions on us. Sanctions is what countries do these days. It's been going on for a long time. When countries are at war, they stop trading with each other and they engage in sanctions. And sanctions allows them to start cutting the supplies of various goods, etc. And so the goal of sanctions is to cripple the other side so that the other side can't function. And that is, in effect, what Jews are doing to whites a lot. They are trying to cut off money. They're trying to cut off methods of payment, etc. And ultimately, if you want to be free, if you want to be free and you want to go somewhere and you want to have control of your life, you need to regain control of all the things that are controlled by your enemy, because now you're at the mercy of your enemy. So you need to look on things like sanctions as being the thing that they're using against us in the alt-right. But these things are very important also in terms of white nationalism, in white survival, and also for our civilization as a whole. So they try to use money and goods and business as a means of cutting off the things that you need. And whether they use banning or whatever, it's all the same thing. It boils down to they are taking away facilities and goods and money in the hope that you will collapse. Now, sanctions is something that we've actually experienced in Southern Africa in our lifetimes, actually. In Rhodesia, Rhodesia was under total world sanctions, total and utter world sanctions. Rhodesia was not allowed to trade in anything, nothing. And this was at the behest of the British. The people who've really suffered from sanctions have been whites. The Germans experienced it, etc. Anybody who was an enemy of the British and the Americans, they experienced it. And it's been used, like I say, in modern times against the whites in Southern Africa. Rhodesia had it the most, and then there was South Africa. South Africa began to experience it more and more. And the South Africans had to play a careful game, very complex game of survival, in order for them to continue. But in the case of Rhodesia, the British were expecting that Rhodesia could be collapsed very quickly through sanctions. The Prime Minister of Britain thought that Rhodesia could be collapsed in a couple of weeks and maybe a couple of months at the most. Now, the blacks, on the other hand, the blacks have never experienced sanctions. I don't know of a single black nation in Africa that has ever had sanctions put on it. But the whites in Southern Africa experienced sanctions. The South Africans experienced sanctions when it came to military weaponry. They had an arms embargo. The British were among the first to start that. But Rhodesia had total economic sanctions, everything. It wasn't allowed to do anything at all. Now, the thing about sanctions and economic banning, if you can call it that, or interference with trading, is the hope that by depriving you of being able to buy and sell, and depriving you of being able to get certain things, for example, oil, that it will totally destroy your economy and cause you to collapse or surrender. Now, Rhodesia is a very interesting case. Unfortunately, I was very small at the time that the original rebellion got going and that sanctions was put on Rhodesia. So I was a baby and I was unaware of those things. But as I grew up, my mother told me quite a few interesting things. And the real key here is that if you deprive a capable people, a capable, intelligent people, of something, then a capable and intelligent people can actually benefit because they can work out methods that will work for them. They'll solve the problem in another way, in another creative way. Now, Rhodesia was very small in terms of the economy compared to, say, South Africa. Rhodesia's economy was like a tenth of South Africa's economy. And Rhodesia didn't have much in the way of industry or skills. It was more developed than the neighboring black nations, but it wasn't a fraction as developed as South Africa. So Rhodesia had a very strict policy for whites who came into Rhodesia. Because the government was functioning on a shoestring budget, they had to ensure that any whites who came into the country, this was before sanctions, this was in the decades prior to it, that any whites who came into the country had to have skills, they had to have some capital, they had to be able to do something. They couldn't just have people pitching up and sitting on welfare. That was not possible. There was no such thing as welfare or the dole or anything like that. So they needed people that could function and could get things done. And that is also one of the reasons why the white population was so small, was because they were very strict on who could come in, because things are tight. And another quote that I've come across regarding Rhodesia, which is worth mentioning, also relates to when people are put under pressure, when whites are put under pressure. A lovely little quote that I came across in an article, it described Rhodesia like this. It said, before 1965, the rebellion, there were people living in Rhodesia. After 1965, there were Rhodesians. And what they were trying to say there is that there used to be this bunch of white people living there, but once they were under pressure and they were suddenly placed under pressure and people were knuckling down on them, the British were knuckling down on them to destroy them, that caused them to bond, and it turned them into patriots. And that, in a nutshell, is the truth. That once you get your beating and everybody's in the same boat together, then people quickly learn to stick together. But among these things that come out, once everyone's in the same boat and everyone's sticking together, and my fate is linked to your fate, etc., then people start working together as a group, and the best comes out of them. So one of the stories my mom used to tell me was that before 1965, before Ian Smith and the rebellion, she said that everything that they had was imported from elsewhere. Even the cornflakes, everything, all their food, you know, lots and lots of things that they bought were not manufactured in Rhodesia at all. They were imported. But she said after sanctions, once sanctions had started, all of a sudden, overnight, the whites started setting up their own little factories, own little businesses, and they were starting to produce all the things that they needed. And so there were suddenly whole industries, little industries of all these goods that Rhodesians were able to produce because they could farm, etc. They could produce food and they could start manufacturing certain kinds of things that they needed, etc. And suddenly there is a white-controlled economy that is booming, and it's starting to produce stuff for the local market. And as it produces stuff and makes sales, they can improve on the products, etc. And then, of course, there are even things that they produce that they can start exporting, like we could export certain things to South Africa. Of course, I must tell you that if it wasn't for the South Africans and the Portuguese sticking together with Rhodesia economically, Rhodesia would have gone down. So thank goodness that all the whites of Southern Africa stuck together, the Portuguese, the Rhodesians, the South Africans. But I must also say from other research that I've done that it is clear that the South Africans played a huge role in helping and guiding the Portuguese and the Rhodesians. There was a lot of cooperation that went on among the whites of Southern Africa. And that's actually a fantastic and fascinating topic by itself. And then there were certain countries in Europe, as well as the Japanese, who just ignored world sanctions and they traded with Rhodesia with a bunch of different goods, especially cars. Like in Rhodesia, most of the cars were either French or Japanese. You literally could only choose between a French car and a Japanese car. That was the stuff that we got the most. And people got used to it. Nobody hassled about it. And there would be some other old cars that are maybe British or German or whatever, but the things that you could get brand new, you could get French stuff, Japanese stuff without a problem. Probably because the French and the Japanese hate the British and they don't care about what the British are up to. But we had a great time with that kind of thing. So the point is that sanctions causes you to start doing things. You now have to start building things of your own. And what comes out of that is very fascinating. You now start developing your own skills. You don't have the same level as the best of the best in the world. But when you are desperate and you're trying to survive, it is better to be able to do something that you can do, even if it's not as good as the best that you can buy. It's at least better to have something under your own control and be able to function with that than to not be able to get anything because you have to buy it from somebody who has put sanctions on you. Out of that comes the building of human capital. People begin to learn skills. Now that you have to build and do things that you never had to do before, you start at the bottom and you learn and you start improving your skills. And you also maybe cooperate with other whites and learn from them, etc. The Rhodesians and South Africans especially often cooperated and shared things back and forth big time. And things just got better and better. And you build up that set of skills, all the kinds of technical and mechanical and other skills that you need in order to be able to be self-sufficient. All this globalism makes you very helpless. And then when that is still messed with using, let's call it junk capitalism, we end up with all kinds of weird products and weird industries that are actually just garbage. I must tell you, I look back on self-sufficiency and there are some interesting lessons that come out of self-sufficiency. In the case of Rhodesia, because we were limited with money and we had to use our foreign exchange and the government had to control the foreign exchange so that we could buy the critical things that the nation needs, there were many things that we couldn't get. There were quite a lot of things that we would have loved to have, but we can't get it because we don't have the forex. We don't have the foreign exchange to get it. So in Rhodesia, there were all kinds of things, physical devices, pumps, vehicles, all kinds of factory and technical stuff that we couldn't get parts for. So one of the fascinating things that came out of Rhodesia was here are these whites who've got old stuff and the old stuff is breaking. And you know what? Rhodesians started learning how to fix it. People started developing skills and fixing old things. And we were dealing with vehicles and tractors and machinery that was 10 or 20 years older than what anybody else in the world had, but we could fix it. We could fix it. We could even start improving on it. And having those skills, then it allows you to develop your skills further and you just move from strength to strength. So at first you're at a disadvantage, but later on, the stuff you learn and the knowledge that is stored in our heads, the human capital of the people as a whole grows. And now all the people are getting, let's call it, mentally enriched by learning skills and having useful skills that we can use for our own survival. So a good lesson from Rhodesia was a tiny country that now is under sanctions, and you've got to count every cent, you've got to be efficient, you've got to be real careful what it is that you import and what is it that you can export. You obviously try to export as much as you can, but you've got to look at your ability to import, and you've got to spend your money wisely. But here were whites who actually started flourishing. We actually flourished on the fact that we had old things and we could start maintaining them and keeping them going, and all kinds of machinery was kept running years and years past its original deadline. While across the border were blacks who were not under sanctions, blacks who were getting tractors and all kinds of machinery, brand new from Europe, from America, etc. And then a tractor's spark plug wouldn't function, and the blacks wouldn't know how to replace a spark plug. So the tractor just stands in the field and it just rusts away and it's gone. Meanwhile, across the border are a bunch of whites who are sitting with stuff that's like 20, 30 years old, and they're functioning. All their stuff is working. So sanctions may well impact people who are idiots. And ironically, the blacks who are the weakest of the lot, have never actually experienced sanctions. The blacks have no idea of the kind of hardships that the whites had to go through. Meanwhile, the whites are growing stronger despite their hardships. If the blacks had those same hardships as the whites, the blacks would have collapsed in a heap. They'd have been starving to death. Meanwhile, the whites were rocking. And as the years went by, Rhodesia started producing more and more and more things that previously they had never done at all. And with the war being on, they even started producing their own weapons and all kinds of things, enhancing vehicles, inventing stuff, etc. And it's just a case of going from strength to strength, because you have the skills and you have the intelligence. So it is whites that have taken the beating the most on things like sanctions. The Germans, the Italians, the South Africans. But the ones who are really weak, the ones like the blacks, they haven't experienced it. And I must tell you that if they ever had to experience true shortages and stuff, they would just die by the million. They would really die by the million, truly. They wouldn't know what to do with themselves. Another example of white ability and whites benefiting from hardship are the Germans. The Germans weren't allowed to have a proper army. They weren't allowed to have certain kinds of weapons. As a result of World War I, they were limited to an army of 100,000. All their neighbors were much stronger than them. Their neighbors had access to all the things that they weren't supposed to have access to. So the Germans weren't supposed to have tanks, fighter aircraft, submarines, etc. And when Hitler and the Nazis took over, they started solving these problems as well. They were also busy trying to obtain and get certain technology and equipment for themselves, despite all these bans that they were under. And it is an absolute fact that they had neighbors who had vast amounts more military equipment than them. The Germans were absolutely on the bones of their ass, and any of their neighbors could have attacked them. Literally, any of their neighbors could have attacked them and defeated them. But Hitler wisely began to build up his military forces. But again, the Jews went on a worldwide campaign of sanctions against the Germans the moment that Hitler came to power. And Jews were rushing around trying to stop the export of German goods, having German goods smashed, and trying to destroy Germany economically. And they were doing this back in the 1930s, the early 1930s, when Hitler came to power. So they were doing their utmost to smash the Germans at the outset. So long before the first shots of the war were fired, Jews were already running around trying to destroy Germany economically worldwide. But the Germans are a clever, inventive, creative white people. And for the Germans, they solved every problem that was thrown at them. And as the war progressed and as time progressed, the Germans were never at a loss for creativity. The creativity of the Germans is beyond imagination. I've looked at lots and lots and lots of stuff the Germans did. The Germans are so insanely creative. There is no group of people on the planet as creative as the Germans. The technical methods and inventions the Germans came up with to solve every conceivable problem times 10 is just incredible. That by itself would require a whole bunch of videos just to show you. I've seen all kinds of things that the Germans solved. But among the really nasty things that the Germans had to solve was they were the ones who, even in World War I, invented the process of getting oil out of coal, because the Germans didn't have oil, but they did have coal. So they worked out a process to get oil out of coal. Later on in South Africa, the Germans somehow got the technology to South Africa. And to this day, we still have that technology in South Africa. We have the ability to produce oil out of coal, thanks to the Germans. But Germans invented synthetic rubber. The Germans needed rubber for tires, etc., and their rubber supplies were cut off. So the Germans invented synthetic rubber. And because the Germans had to struggle with shortages of fuel, etc., during the war, you'll see all kinds of crazy things that the Germans came up with. They had tanks and vehicles that were powered with, I think, wood. And these weren't battle tanks that were powered by wood. They were training tanks. But they used, I think it's a wood-powered thing, where you burn some wood and you create a gas and you can run an engine. I think there are people even now in America who do that sort of thing. But the types of things that the Germans created as time went by, their creativity was just insane. The Germans just came up with so many things that just boggle the mind. But again, it proves that if you have an intelligent people and you put them under pressure and they work together, you'll be amazed at what they can come up with. And as far as I'm concerned, the Germans are the greatest example in all of history. There is no example of creativity that even comes close to what the Germans got up to in World War II. From the time of Hitler until the end of World War II, these people were never at a loss for any kind of problem that needed solving. They solved problems to a degree that was just insane. And whether it was war-related or any other kind of engineering-related stuff, the Germans just could solve anything under the sun. You won't see those worthless scum Israelis or any of these Africans ever going through even 1% of what whites have managed to pull off. The South Africans under apartheid functioned somewhat differently. They were in a very special kind of situation and they played a very careful game. Because of their economy and because of the strength of their economy and because of the sophistication of their economy, as well as the incredible mineral wealth of South Africa itself, the South Africans were much more like the Germans in the sense that they had a powerful economy. At one point in the time of apartheid, at one point, South Africa was the eighth biggest trading nation in the world. At one point. The main area that they hit the South Africans with early on, that the British hit them with early on, and I think it was then extended to other nations, but I think the British were the first, was an arms embargo to stop them from getting military weaponry. This is basically to stop them being able to defend themselves against the blacks, against the communists, against the Russians and the Chinese. So the South Africans in the 1960s, I think round about the middle of the 1960s, were already getting their first taste of military sanctions. And the South Africans immediately started work on solving those problems. And one of the first things that they did was, under the time of Hendrik Verwoerd, was that they set out to create their own military rifle, their own semi-automatic military rifle that could be used in battle. And that was later known as the R1. The R1 was basically a version of the Belgian FN, which was the standard NATO rifle. But the South Africans built their own and made their own mods to it. Later on, they created much more. They created the R4 and so on. They created lots of weapons. South Africa, as the decades went by, because military sanctions was the main sanctions that they were facing, South Africa, as the decades went by, just created better and better military equipment. And later on, their stuff was world class. Some of their stuff was even better than the best in the rest of the world. By the time that it got to the 1980s, South Africa had artillery systems like the G5 and the G6, and these artillery systems were the best and most advanced in the world. The South Africans started modifying tanks. They took the British Centurion tank, made many modifications to it, turned it into a tank that was called the Olifant, which is Afrikaans for elephant. They went and did tons and tons of military stuff. South Africa created the greatest military industry in all of Africa, and it was seriously advanced. They were later developing their own rockets that could be fired from aircraft. They were even modifying aircraft. They were taking advanced aircraft and modifying them. They took French Mirage jets and started changing them completely, re-engineering them, and so on. The French Mirage was turned into the Cheetah so that it could fight the MiGs from the Russians. The South Africans were doing nuclear stuff. The South African military industry was just insane. Even today, we've got the remnants of what was once a fantastic military industrial complex that we had. It was fantastic. What South Africa produced was just incredible. But because South Africa had such a strong economy and certain minerals and things that were so valuable to sell, South Africa was never quite under full-blown sanctions like Rhodesia. And the South Africans also played a very careful diplomatic economic game to try to stay away from total sanctions. It is possible that one of the key reasons why South Africa might eventually have looked at handing over power to the blacks was because the crazy lunatic Americans and British were going to put full-on sanctions on South Africa. That is a possibility, and that would have really caused a lot of mayhem. And people at that point were still too soft to want to go down that path. They weren't quite ready for it. But I think in the future, whites are going to be a lot tougher. But the bottom line is that when whites are under pressure and when whites need to take control of certain things for their own survival, that their real creativity then starts coming out. And then when there's no more of this shopping mall mentality, and you've got to build things yourself, fix things yourself, solve problems yourself, it enriches you. And it doesn't just enrich one person. You now start getting lots of people working together in an industry and in businesses and together, whether they are in government or business or wherever, military. And you get a whole bunch of cooperation now that starts taking place. And as a group, the group develops skills, human capital. The group develops vital skills that are theirs, that they can use and they have control over. Nobody can take it away from you. Nobody can take your knowledge away from you. Nobody can take away from you the things that you have learned. And in the process of doing these things, you may also need to invent tools to fix other things. So there's lots and lots and lots of creativity and invention that takes place. And as people are under pressure, they change and they adapt and they solve problems. Whites are absolutely excellent at problem solving. And I must tell you, I've watched the blacks here in Southern Africa. I must tell you, their ability to solve problems is exceptionally limited when compared to what whites can face. So whites need to stop thinking just in terms of money and buying and selling and that sort of thing. Whites need to think a lot about developing skills. Develop skills within yourself, but also we as groups need to develop skills. And we in South Africa in particular, there are tons of things we need to learn to do and tons of problems we need to solve. But all of these things enrich you and they make you stronger and they allow you to control your life. And you no longer have an enemy that turns around and says, oh, you can't have this anymore. Once you are self-sufficient and you've got knowledge and you've got ability to do things, then it doesn't matter what others do. you can look after yourself. And I must tell you that there's a lot more to white efficiency when I think about it. I am quite convinced, like in the case of what I call junk capitalism, I'm quite convinced that there's a lot of stuff that can be done much simpler, much cheaper. It may look a bit rough around the edges, but it will work absolutely fine. I marvel, for example, at modern cars. I see lots and lots of people, especially blacks, but also some of the whites who are still doing very well. I see them buying all these big, bulky, sort of geeky, nerdy cars. And these cars have got all kinds of technology in them, all kinds of fancy technology in them. But those cars are insanely expensive. And I look at those things and I say to myself, but I'm sure that cars 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 80 years ago, you would have had a car that doesn't have any of these fancy doodads, but you can get into it, you can start it, you can drive it. If that car breaks, you'll even be able to fix it. But these modern cars, if it breaks, you won't be able to fix it. You'll have to take it to them. And you also get these cars and tractors and machinery that have got all kinds of fancy software and stuff and all kinds of things that can only be fixed by the agents. But if you are struggling in life and you're under stress, and for example, you're even in a war situation, you don't want all these silly doodads that you can't fix or that have got all kinds of things in them that can go wrong. You actually want stuff that is rugged and stuff that can be fixed easily, etc. And on the topic of cars, I've had a good look at this for a long time. And I've even kept my oldest car. I've got a car that's over 30 years old. And my intention is to keep that car going until until I drop down dead. Because I'm absolutely convinced that capitalism has moved into such a junk phase that there are so many things that we are actually wasting our energy on that we don't need to do. And I'm absolutely convinced that efficiency can win the day. Efficiency combined with simplicity. Ironically, the Russians, in the time of the Soviet Union, the Russians did most of their engineering in a similar way. They went for a very simple type of solution to a problem, and it would be very cheap, and all their stuff to this day functions on that kind of basis. The Germans were also very, very efficient, but they did know which certain things they needed to go for more sophistication. But on the whole, the Germans were extremely efficient, but the Russians were not too bad themselves in certain respects. And when I look at a lot of stuff that comes from America and the modern West, I look at a lot of stuff and I think that one is actually wasting money. We're wasting money on all kinds of garbage. And you could probably get the same thing done cheaper and more efficiently in many ways. And at the end of the day, if you're looking for self-sufficiency, you want stuff that you can fix, that you can build, that you can modify, or even something that's old, but you can fix it and you can use it and you know how to use it. I can't stress enough the importance of self-sufficiency. And people in the white right need to realize this, that the white right itself is under a form of sanctions. And building up our own skills and our own human capital is important, not just in this movement, but also it's going to be something that you're going to need all the time. Because even if we get more support, etc., our enemies will always be trying to smash us and destroy us. And I really think that self-sufficiency for all whites is very important. Because anything that you're not self-sufficient on, the enemy just has to find that one particular touch point where you are not self-sufficient, and they turn off the tap and down you go. And that is the kind of thinking that people need to be aware of. And then there's the other thing also of our enemies coming and actually dumbing us down and moving certain things away. Like, look at Americans and British and Europeans who've had entire industries moved to China. And that results in a loss of human capital. And whites are losing skills that they used to have. And you're going to pay the price for that one day. This notion that we're all in this lovey-dovey global world, that's a bunch of Jewish claptrap, that. Warfare and struggle teaches you to be self-sufficient in virtually everything. You need to be self-sufficient, because if you're not self-sufficient, then whoever is providing that thing to you can pull the plug on you, and then you're in big trouble. So self-sufficiency combined with knowledge, combined with skills, I can't impress enough on whites the importance of these things. And in our own movement, it's something that we have to do in our own movement, even just for keeping websites up and doing things and all the little bits and pieces of things we do. You'll see that the enemy is constantly finding the place where they can smack you and hurt you. And that is a lesson of life, that as a group, whether you're a small group or a big group or a nation or a race, you have to be able to be self-sufficient to a large degree. There are things that are just too critical to just let it be. And you can't just let some freaking Jew and foreigner and non-white start taking care of things. The more I look at life, the more I'm saying to myself, whites need to take control of every aspect of their lives. Every aspect. If you don't take control of every aspect of your life, then you're going to lose control of everything and you are going to be weakened. So, developing skills and knowledge and physical things that you can do and intellectual things that you can do, I cannot impress enough upon you the importance of knowledge and self-sufficiency. And it will help you the most in times of trouble.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports, and fancy coffee too. energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.